Welcome back to another week of Passive Income Pilots, everyone. Tate Duryea here with my good friend, Ryan Gibson. How you doing, man?
I'm excited to talk about assisted living and how we can invest in it and how we can benefit from this thing called the gray tsunami that's taking over our country because baby boomers are retiring en masse and they need a place to stay. And we've got the perfect guest for that today, Dwayne Clark.
We certainly do. Senior living is an asset class that I learned about a lot of years ago. Someone was presenting at a conference, a real estate conference, and they put this graph up on the board. And I talk about this in the episode briefly, but it had a bar chart basically for every single age. So how many people are one, how many people are two, how many people are three, how many people are all the way up through 110 years old, right? And of course, it varies up and down. And the number of people in their late 60s to late 70s, there's this big bump. And that bump is moving forward in time. And this is creating this incredible tailwind for assisted living, senior living, old people care, which is something that we all are dealing with aging parents. I have an unfortunate thing that's going on in my life right now where my mom was playing tennis just yesterday and she took a really bad fall and fractured her hip. So I had to fly over and see her before she went into surgery. She got three screws into her hip. It's really unfortunate seeing this stuff, but while we're all dealing with it on a personal level, it's also something that we should be attuned to as investors because we always want to follow tailwinds. We want to follow demographic trends, population and job trends, and this is a massive trend. So it's something we want to learn about and figure out how to put capital behind.
Yeah, and no better. And this is not just, not to belittle self-storage investing or whatever, some triple net thing, but assisted living is not just a building. It is a community. It's where people live. You have to have lots of staff. You have to have excellent leasing ability. You have to have a sophisticated operation that has food and all kinds of amenities and things like that. So when we looked for who to bring on the show, we brought on what I consider one of the top national brands, or at least one of the top brands on the West Coast, Aegis Living. We brought on the guy who started that, Dwayne Clark, and he has just built a moat around the market in that he builds the most beautiful buildings, has some of the highest rated communities in the area. He's got over 36 communities on the West Coast alone, serving over 2,500 residents. He has 2,500 staff, and he has tons of properties in development. And actually, personally, one of the Aegis facilities is being built about a mile from my house in Seattle. And the buildings this guy builds are beautiful. And the one that's in my neighborhood is by University of Washington. And it looks just like a building you would see on the UW campus. And he tries to really articulate and design these buildings so that they look and feel like the neighborhoods that they serve, differentiating himself from the competition. But then the employees love working there. The guests love staying there, and it's one of the highest rated places to go. So like lining all that up is really difficult. And one thing that he's done is really just have some of his personal experience, and his world-class companies are modeled after places like Costco, Nordstrom's, Starbucks to create a new model for assisted living. So I could tell you the billions of real estate that he has and all these things. But at the end of the day, when you're looking to invest in assisted living, you want to find a guy like Dwayne. You want to find a guy who's been doing it for a long time, who has a really good track record, and just is running a really great brand. So without further ado, let's get to the show.
Welcome to Passive Income Pilots, where pilots upgrade their money. This is the definitive source for personal finance and investment tactics for aviators. We interview world-renowned experts and share these lessons with the flying community. So if you're ready for practical knowledge and insights, let's roll.
Welcome to the show, Dwayne. Really excited to have you. Why don't you go ahead and just talk to us about your experience in building really an empire of assisted living facilities and talking through some of the challenges that you've had and some of the things that you've done to really build a world-class operation that takes care of our elders.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me. I've been involved in senior housing for about 38 years. Got involved on more of a dare than anything else by my sister. I was working in the criminal justice system in my mid-20s And she said, I'm on a board of a senior housing company. Why don't you get involved in that? And I laughed and said, I've been working with murderers and bank robbers. I don't know anything about old people. And so went down, again, this is in 1985, didn't have laptops or iPads or computers. So went down to the library and looked at the microfiche and started studying this thing called the Silver Tsunami and the Gray Ape of America. And I thought, wow, this is really something that's going to be huge in our future. So went to work for a company out of Seattle, a company called Leisure Care, phenomenal company, worked for that for 7 years, got recruited away after that to be senior vice president, then executive vice president of a company called Sunrise, who became the largest senior housing company in the world. At one point had 557 communities, and took them public, and going public with institutional investors kind of changed the culture of that company substantially, from what I fell in love with to what it became. And I think there's an inherent conflict between taking care of sweet, old people who are gentle and loving and nice, and dealing with an aggressive warrior mentality Wall Street investor. And so there's an inherent conflict. So I'm not sure senior housing should be public, in my view. So after almost 5 years with that company, decided I was going to build my own company that had a great culture and a great reputation and great operations, and went out and sought out investors. Our first raise, we raised $10 million, burned through that very quickly. Second raise, 6 months later, $7.5 million, burned through that very quickly. Third raise, another $5 million, burned through that very quickly. And we found ourselves essentially out of money with about 6 weeks to go before we refinanced and our first building and full cash out. And so I remember my partner calling me one day and saying, hey, we're out of money. We don't have any money for payroll. Where can you get money? And I said, I've given you my savings. We've mortgaged our house. We've maxed out our credit cards. We've done all that. Only thing I have left is my son's college account. And he goes, well, we have to use it. And I go, no, he's going to UCLA next month. We can't use that. And he says, well, we got to make payroll. We'll pay you back. And so we used it, his college account, to go to out for out-of-state tuition. And he ended up not going to UCLA because we couldn't afford it. We didn't get paid back. And he's a proud alum of University of Washington. But that's the kind of things that sacrifices that we've been in business 27, 28 years. You really reflect back on, you go, hey, this is the price I had to pay to get to today. And I think that's a message that I would share with all the real estate investors and entrepreneurs out there. It's not going to be easy to do. And so we've been in business 28 years now. We have about 3,000 residents, 3,000 employees, almost $400 million in revenue. We opened up our 37th location in Ballard last month, our 38th this next month in Laurelhurst. And depending on what the prevailing cap rate is, which changes with the wind these days, between $1.5 and $3 billion in real estate. So very happy. We've been voted best company to work for 12 times. We've been at Glassdoor top 50. So very happy with our culture, very proud of the reputation. And if you call the trade associations or the banks around our industry, they'll say that we are one of the top, if not the number one operator in the United States in senior housing. So,
no, I think that's great. And I think sharing that sort of failure and the hard times of raising money and spending money and then becoming successful is extremely important, especially when you're thinking about finding an operator to invest with who's been battle tested and who has a tremendous amount of experience. I love the fact that you had started a career in Sunrise and graduated out of that and then took the best elements. And I know you had looked in like Nordstrom's and Starbucks as like building an iconic brand and then really supporting an awesome operation with the right heart to take care of seniors. And I think all of those things combining together has just built it a tremendous brand. And the Laurelhurst facility that you're speaking about or care center is in my neighborhood. So I got the benefit of seeing it actually come out of the ground and being built every day. And the brand spoke to everything about that site, the cleanliness of the construction, how it went up and what it looks like. It's a beautiful facility, a place that I would want to put my parents or grandparents. And so I feel like you've just really established yourself as a top operator, as you've said, in the space, and which is phenomenal. Making this kind of relative to sort of a investor who's listening to this, who's looking for investing in the space, assisted living, can you speak to the demographics? What's going on in this country right now with how many baby boomers are now becoming your customers or part of these assisted living facilities as they age out? and how that maybe compares to the number of people that were doing that in the past?
Yeah, I think this is a very unique time in terms of senior housing, assisted living, whatever we want to call it. I would differentiate skilled nursing from assisted living. That's an entirely different industry and regulated different, licensed different and everything else. But in terms of senior housing, during World War II, when everyone came home, we had all these births, right? In 1946, we saw a huge increase in the birthing of babies. And those people now in 2026 are going to be 80 years old. So there's a tremendous opportunity for these aging people to move into senior housing. The average age to move in is about 81, 82. And what's happened is that because of COVID, because of the interest rates that have been rising, we've not had any new supply in 4 years. We were one of the few builders, operators in the country to have new properties come on. We've had five come on in the last 4 years and about to have our sixth. So that's been very unusual, but hardly any, I can think of two other than us in the Seattle area. And so we have this kind of inverse situation where we have a huge growing demand that goes from 2026 to we're about 18 years of these baby boomers, these 80 plus people that are coming in with no new supply. In addition to that, Alzheimer's, which is a horrible disease, actually killed my own mother, who was a resident of Aegis. That demographic within the aging demographic, who's growing at a rapid rate, we have about 5.5 or 6 million people in the United States growing. No cure in sight. There's things that slow down the disease, but nothing even close to curing it. That number could hit 10 million in the next 15 to 20 years. So in Alzheimer's, residents are about 35 to 40% of the component within senior housing. So that's a big demographic within it. So this is a unique time for senior housing in that you have this growing demand factor and not enough supply because of interest rates and the lack of building during COVID. And the other thing that's really going to stop building, I have a call with Welltower, which is one of the largest REITs in the country, is a major supplier of senior housing capital tomorrow. And they stop developing. And, you know, in large part, these big REITs have stopped developing and buying stuff because there's not enough operational talent, right? And so the A operators, I mean, we have a capacity to say we can do two or three a year. Some people are like, I'm going to do 20 a year, right? Well, this is not like making lattes. You know, you can make 20 lattes a day and screw up four of them, be okay, right? You can't build 20 senior housing and screw up four of them because people die. And so we've always been in a quality, always over quantity, and making sure that we do things really right. And we pick the sites right, that the construction's right, that we build buildings to the neighborhood. I mean, we look and say, okay, what kind of building do we want to build almost on the UW campus in Laurelhurst? Oh, well, it should look like a sorority or a frat house, right? And so let's build with that old Gothic architecture because that fits the neighborhood. In Ballard, we built a building that looks like an old fish cannery, very cool inside, but we even have a Viking ship that's hanging from the ceiling. So you look at these things and you say, well, these people obviously chose this neighborhood because they like it, right? There's history or elements in this neighborhood that people like. Why not build that into the architecture? That's very different. We're the only people in the country who do that, right? We built a building in Lake Union, very popular building. By the way, the greenest senior housing building in the world we built and was right off Lake Union where the Boys in the Boats practice. So we did a whole theme on Boys in the Boat, have a skiff running down the lobbies you enter, have murals of the Boys in the Boat, had the grandchildren of the Boys in the Boat, had the UW rowing team open the building. So again, we do things a little differently. Our Alzheimer's unit in Laurelhurst has a miniature Husky football field in it, in the building. We have a helmet car in the building, right? So—
And for those not in Seattle, that's because UW campus is literally right down, University of Washington's right down the street.
Across the street.
Yeah. So he's matching the university decor. So very cool.
Yeah. And so I would just speak to entrepreneurs out there. It's just not getting into an industry. It's how are you going to turn an industry upside down and put your mark on it, put your brand on it, right? Hey, I do this different than anyone else. I do it better than anyone else. And that becomes your brand. That becomes your signature of how you differentiate yourself. And hopefully that equates to value.
And Dwayne, that's so incredible to hear. I mean, that's the special sauce, right? That sometimes is hard to quantify on a spreadsheet, but makes successful operators incredibly successful. We were turned on to the silver tsunami, as they call it, right? I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago at a real estate conference, someone was presenting and showed this bar graph of the population by age of the entire US. And there's just this massive wave. And so that's the demand side. I wasn't actually aware of the constraints on the supply side due to COVID. You were saying that occupancy, I think we chatted earlier, you said occupancy prior to COVID was about 93%. It dropped to 77% during COVID.
Yeah, 16% drop.
Yeah.
It's about 84 now. It's coming back up, but so, not at pre-COVID levels.
So I was very aware of the demand side. I wasn't as aware of the lack of supply at the same time. And yeah, it's always been on our radar as an incredibly investable asset class. But on that note, it's a very complex asset class, right?
Yeah.
Because this isn't, and this is what I've told some of our investors that ask about it. Hey, are you guys going to do some senior living? And it's, well, this isn't self-storage. This isn't multifamily. This is very complex. This takes very sophisticated operators that know what they're doing. And so we want to take our time to get to know the asset class. So on that note, what are the different tiers? You mentioned that assisted living and senior housing were totally different asset classes. What are all of the different subcategories within it?
Well, if you came to town and said, hey, Dwayne, I'd like a room to rent tonight. Can you give me a recommendation? I'd say, sure. You can go to Motel 6. You can go to Ramada Inn. You can go to Marriott. You can go to Comfort Inn. You can go to Ritz-Carlton. You can go to Four Seasons. You can rent a room in somebody's house through Airbnb. So there's gradations of quality, right? So that's the first aspect. And then on the other axis, there's gradation in care, right? So you have independent, we have senior apartments where it's just, hey, it's age regulated and there's no services. And you have independent living where you get some meals and some housekeeping, some activities. And then you get into assisted living where you get care, help with bathing and dressing and those kinds of things, medication. And then you get into Alzheimer's care, which is 24-hour intense care where people wander or have different kind of behavior issues and so on. And then one of the things that we discovered 25, 30 years ago is that most of the people that were living in nursing homes could live adequate, productive lives in a better environment than a skilled nursing home. 2 or 3 people per room and laying in bed all day. And you come into one of our buildings, you go into Laurelhurst, it looks like a Four Seasons hotel. And you have your own private room and you have chefs that worked at the best restaurants in town. And you've got managers that worked in 5-star hotels, and it's a different level of service, right? And that's what my vision was, is to be the Four Seasons of senior housing. And so we hire people from Four Seasons because we want that training. We want that expertise, right? And the difficulty for investors to understand, the first question everybody should ask is, who's the management company? Because there's lots and lots of people that want to take your money and say, hey, we're the experts in this. We're nationally known and blah, blah, blah. And don't fall for the fact just because they have a lot of buildings, they're good. Huh? You can have a lot of buildings and be crap. Motel 6 has a lot of buildings, right? So that doesn't mean they're the customer service expert in the hospitality space, right? So I think in my view, having done this 38 years, the people that rule this industry are what I call the super regional operators, right? They have between 20, 25 communities and 60 communities, right? They know their space really well. They don't grow it too quickly. They have really good managers, seasoned up. I mean, when you go and you talk to the managers, if you go and compare buildings, you'll know who an Aegis manager is versus an inferior competitor, just by how they talk, how they present themselves. In fact, almost every year, the licensing people in Washington, California, because you have to send your administrators through a licensing course for 3 or 4 days, they almost always call me and they said, I know who the Aegis managers were before anyone said anything, the way they dress, the way they talk, the way they look, everything else. So it's a complex industry. It's also capital intensive. I mean, this is not an industry for someone who wants to invest $10,000, right? We have 323 investors, all private individuals. I think there's 70 some of those that are staff. So about 250 people that almost all of them are my friends. would take any investment under $250,000, $300,000. These things are capital intensive. I mean, a new building, a Laurelhurst is $125, $130 million, right? With 30 to 35% capital contribution. You're talking about $40 million raise with friends and family. So we like people who can write $1 million check, and because I don't want to have 150 investors. So typically on a property, we'll have anywhere from 30 to 55 investors on a property. But again, it's capital intensive. But if you look at the five top investments here in the last year, storage was one of them, right? And senior housing was another. And so those are always, if they're not one, they're two and three. And that's why I think this industry is so compelling. And it's just going to get even more compelling here in the next 24 months.
That's interesting. When you think about the cost, right? You say it's more complex, it's more capital intensive. You're building a building, you're basically building a Four Seasons hotel from the sound of it with a lot of unique features. But if you don't mind, let's talk about OpEx. Just the staff, the costs, the meals, running the facility and kind of scale that a little bit. I feel like I always wonder, if you earn a dollar of revenue, typically what is your expense going to be before debt service on something like that, if you don't mind sharing?
Yeah, you're probably looking at anywhere, depending on the size of the building, what market it's in, anywhere from 28 to 40%.
Okay.
Probably averages low 30s.
Okay.
So that's actually a lower expense ratio than I would have thought. To give the audience some context, a multifamily building is usually about 50%. So that just speaks to the amount of revenue that you're generating, right?
Yeah. I mean, third unit apartment building, I mean, I don't know what generates $5 million, $6 million in revenue. 100 unit senior housing building can generate $15 million.
Right. So you obviously have a lot more overhead, but there's also a lot more revenue. It gets down to, okay, why invest? Because you were talking about how as a public company, they have a fiduciary to their investors, right? To put profits first. And that's the antithesis of what you're trying to accomplish with senior living, which is putting care first. But there's obviously money in it, right? So why invest for a dollar of profit in this versus a dollar of profit here? And can you walk us through the economics behind it? Versus some other asset classes?
Yeah, I think first of all, people like diversity, right? So so investing in all multifamily the rest of your life may not be the best thing to do, right? The second thing is that, as we talked about, the demographics are growing. So if we put out a packet today, your IRR is probably going to be around 14%, 13, 14%. You get a pref out of the gate of 7, all in after refis, probably 13, 14%. A lot of that will depend on what interest rates are doing, obviously. That's not that much different than an apartment complex, right? What I think is going to change dramatically is the cap rate.
Right.
And the cap rate will change dramatically as you have less supply and more demand, right? And so what you're essentially betting on is that demographic surge and going, this cap rate in 5 years could be super compelling. So that's the bet.
That's super interesting.
Can you talk to, there's a lot of listeners who probably have parents who are about to age into an assisted living facility. Can you speak to what they should be looking for and the traps people get stuck in? The other thing too that I'm really interested in is this stuff isn't cheap. And as a caring son, I mean, I want to make sure my parents are well cared for, but sometimes financially, there might not be enough resources there to care or put someone in a nice facility. You know, kind of speak to that dynamic a little bit, if you don't mind.
Yeah. So let me take the last question first. If you look at America, depending on what city you're in, anywhere from 67 to 75% of people own a home, right? And so we go into areas where the average house value is at least $800,000, up to we're in areas where the average house value is $2.5 million. And so we will not build in an area where it's less than that. Okay. And the reason for that is because those people then take that equity and pay for care. You don't have to be rich to live in ages. You just have to have a loan to own, right? And if you think of the average 82-year-old, they probably have some Social Security. Maybe they have an IRA. Maybe they have a pension, some of those and some other assets, stocks, whatever. So maybe that's $3,000 a month combined. It's not a lot. It's $2,000 or $3,000 a month. Okay. Depending on where you live, you're going to have house equity that's going to be anywhere from, again, their houses are paid off. So they're not got a mortgage on it. They didn't take a mortgage out at 70. probably, hopefully. But, you know, they're going to have $800,000 in equity. I mean, today in a treasury, if you put that out, you're going to have $3,500 a month on top of that, right? So you're looking at, okay, I probably have $6,500 coming in a month, right? Before I dip into my equity. People don't move into our buildings until the last 2 to 3 years of their house, of their life, right? And the cost, there's a variety of variables in the cost. First of all, you have to understand what's the driving focus of cost. I have a building in Linwood that's 40% cheaper than the building in Bellevue. Why? Land cost, right? Land cost, operating cost. My staff in Linwood, they take less, their hourly wage is less than that in Bellevue, right? You have to look at that. I have a building in Kent, much less than the one in Mercer Island, right? So it's not that we want to charge as much as we can in these buildings. Market sets the tone for that, right? And then the two biggest expenses are your mortgage costs and your salaries, right? And so those are driven by location. So if you want to live in Bellevue or Mercer Island or Laurelhurst, you're going to pay for that convenience of what that location is, not unlike a hotel or an apartment house or anything else. The cost, what is the cost? Well, depends on what building you choose first, then what apartment you choose. So, I mean, it could be anywhere from $6,000. Now, keep in mind, that's not just an apartment. That's all your meals. That's oversight. That's activities. That's laundry. That's transportation. That's housekeeping. That's your utilities. I mean, all these things that you would normally pay for. But it could go up to 10, 11, 12,000 if you want the penthouse, right? And then care is done on frequency, how many baths you get, how long that takes, whatever. And that runs the gamut. I mean, you have people that need $1,000 worth of care and you need people that need $20,000 worth of care, just depend on how frail they are. So, but the misconception for most people is that I have to be rich to do this. Most of our people are nurses or Boeing employees or mailmen, or they're not rich, but they bought a house in Magnolia 40 years ago and it's worth $1.5 million. So now they don't spend all of that, but they may spend, depending on what their other residual income is, they may spend 100 of it, right? Or 200 of it, but they're not going to spend 500 of it.
That makes sense.
That's so great.
I know you've been dying to jump in. Go ahead.
Yeah, just continuing on sort of the actionable information for a lot of our listeners who are in the prime working years of their careers and they're trying to be smarter with their money. They're right in that age demographic where, unfortunately, it's something we all have to deal with, is aging parents. How do you broach that conversation with your parents? How do you avoid getting taken advantage of by something that you don't know? What's some advice that you could give to the working aged kids of parents who are aging?
It's a great question. And ironically, and you guys didn't know this, but I'm writing a book because it's been asked of me so many times, called Where's Your Purse is the name of the book, Guide for Children with Aging Parents. So I have been writing that book for a year and a half. It'll probably come out sometime mid next year. And it's filled with so many tips, probably 30 chapters of like, when do you tell your mom to stop driving? When do you take the keys? How do you avoid senior fraud, the people that call and try to get money from people? How do you know when it's time to move your mom into a community? How do you prevent falls? How do you, you know, grant their independence and dignity while making sure they're safe? I mean, all these things that people freak out about, right? So we could do a 2-hour show on those things, and maybe we'll do a show when the book comes out. But there's so many things, right? My mother-in-law is 88 and phenomenal person, lives independently, refuses to move into one of Duane's communities. And as her loving children, she has 6 of them, look at her and say, geez, mom, when's it going to be time? At the end of the day, the generic answer is this, Tate. You want to make sure that the person's safe, right?
Yeah.
And you want to make sure the person, people around them are safe. So if somebody starts a fire in their living room and it burns their apartment down and the whole complex, it's time. And there's little indicators before that happens, right? And my own mother, I mean, I'm an expert in senior housing and aging and longevity and Alzheimer's. My own mother, I probably took a year too long to make the decision. And the crime about this, the crime, guys, is the fact that people will actually age better in a community, right? Now, people say, well, of course you're going to say that. You're the owner of a senior housing community. But let me give you the science and the statistic behind it. The number one reason that people live long is their community. You don't believe me, the longest study in aging is called the Grant Study that was done by Harvard 82 years ago. They studied genetics, food, exercise, everything. And they found that if you had an active community and you were in a happy relationship, that you would live as long as 7 years longer. What's killing our elderly is the isolation at home, right? Where they have no one, they don't have any purpose, there's nothing, no reason to get out of bed, they don't eat properly. Those are the things that kill people at home. So you want to look at it. And I've personally gone to literally dozens of people's homes to assess them and open the refrigerator and they've got a pint of ice cream and maybe eggs that were bought 4 months ago, right? That's what they have. And they're not poor people. These are wealthy people that are just not, their care is not being overseen correctly. I could tell you dozens of stories of how when people move in and they don't look well and you're like, geez, I don't know how long they're going to live. And I see them a month later and the color in their face is remarkable. They have six friends sitting with them at dinner. They're laughing. They're drinking wine at night and they're going out on a pilgrimage to the Seattle Art Museum, right? So
that's amazing.
You have to have community to survive and you have to have oversight. So those are two things that being senior housing provide.
That's fantastic. That's great advice.
You've seemed to have mastered operations, marketing, branding. Good people love working for you, clearly, all while balancing elderly care, which is very delicate. And you've done it at scale. I know that you talked about slow growth and that, but you've really scaled this. I mean, you've scaled it correctly and scaled it right. Is there somebody in your life or an inflection point that really made you who you are as an individual? Because that is a very powerful thing that you've done to have all this balance together. As a real estate operator, I am extremely proud of you. Have done an exceptional thing. That's a Rubicon of everything that I'm trying to do as a real estate operator, is getting people to love working there, taking care of your customer, building a memorable brand that people will not forget, and really just distinguishing yourself. I'm not sure if our listeners have ever been to an Aegis facility, but it really speaks volumes when you see it. But yeah, Dwayne, I'd love to hear your thoughts on how that became to be, how you acquired all that sort of fortitude to get to where you are today.
Well, there's obviously dozens and dozens of people that I've stood on the shoulders of to get to today. So, I mean, my mother was a huge influence over me about having good relationships with people. And I came from an impoverished family. My mother was a single mom that raised four kids, put them in college, was a line cook in a restaurant, very poor family. I think I have this organization, a foundation that I started called D1. We mentor kids of color who are the best football players in the state. And we had a meeting last night. And at one of the meetings, we have CEO nights. We had three prominent CEOs in Seattle come in and speak to these kids. And a similar question was asked to them. And my answer when they asked me this question was, the greatest teacher in life is adversity, right? That if you look at all the bad things that happen to you and you have a choice, you can wilt and be a victim or you can go, oh my God, that's such a valuable teaching moment, right? My grandmother lived in our house for 12 years until she broke her hip and went to a nursing home. My mom used to go see her every day. She broke her hip when I was 12. She lived 2 years in the nursing home and then died. I think that influenced me a lot because I saw this very proud woman. She spoke four languages, owned her own business in the 1930s, had 13 children. I mean, my grandmother was a rock star, right? And I saw how she was treated and I went, oh my God, don't they know who my grandmother is? She's like a rock star. She wasn't treated very well. My mom being a line cook and having abusive bosses and coming home with burn marks on her arms and grease stains on her face and everything, working 12-hour shifts for barely minimum wage, that influenced me. So, you know, oftentimes we look at these things that happen to us and we say, oh God, I have 9 grandchildren, two kids, but 9 grandkids. They have no other hobbies other than having children. And so, you know, I look at them and I try to inspire them and say, hey, the bad things that happen to you, you're going to thank your life for giving you those bad things, because those are the ladder, the rungs on the ladder that help propel you to success. If you stop at one rung, you're done, right? The first obstacle that comes in your way, you're done. obviously, many people have influenced me and taught me how to be. I think character is incredibly important and incredibly short supply in today's business environment. I also think if you're an entrepreneur out there, it doesn't matter where you went to school, who your parents were, how much money you had, who you know, you better have resilience and persistence, because that's the ticket to the game. If you can just keep going through the fire and have resilience and persistence, you could have got all F's in school and left at eighth grade. But if you have that, that, hey, I'm never going to quit, that's what makes good athletes, that's what makes good soldiers, that's what makes good business people. And so that's my perspective on life, is that, hey, you may hit me hard and I may go down, but I'm never going to stay down and I'm just going to keep fighting. And I'll be 66 this year and I have no plans to retire and I love what I do and they're going to have to drag me out. So
love that. Love that.
Dwayne, you've been very generous with your time and we really appreciate you coming on. My last question, maybe Tate has one more as well, but what's something in the last investing related? What's something for our listeners that maybe you've learned in the last 6 months that you didn't know about investing or that was an epiphany in investing that you've recently thought of? Maybe you're like, man, after all these years of experience, over 35 years in the industry and as an investor in real estate and assisted living and working in a previous organization, what's something new that you've taken away in the last 6 months?
Well, I think we're at a time in our history where we never seen interest rates do this, right? I mean, that's we used to, because we were getting 3.5% loans, we would stress our properties at 7%, right? And I'd go, well, it's not going to go up 350 basis points, right? That's never going to happen, right?
Unfortunately.
I had proof points. You go back 30, 40 years and go, this has never happened, right? It's not going to happen. And when people say, well, how much margin do you have? Well, I have 350 basis points margin. Oh, that's a lot. That's wildly conservative. Now I look at them going, huh. But, it's just a shocker. I mean, I'm stunned by what interest rates have done. And I think anyone that's listening to this podcast, I mean, what goes up must come down, right? And so it's not going to be as optimistic as we thought. You're not going to have a Fed reduction here. This next meeting, probably not in summer. I predict probably 25 basis points drop before the election just because it's politically smart to do it. As much as we say elections don't influence it, the election will influence it. And then you'll probably see 50 to 75 points next year. But even for a savvy real estate investor like me, that's a wake-up call. This has created a scar on my memory banks about you can never be too careful. Now, we're fine. We have a big balance sheet and we're going to do great. But you can never have too big a balance sheet. And banks do crazy things when they start freaking out about this stuff. They've called us. They've never asked us to pay down a loan. But they called us and made the remark, we've asked almost every one of your competitors to pay down their loans. And I go, well, I hope you're not asking me because I'm not going to do it. And they're like, no, we're not asking you. But that's painful. And somebody, they come in one day and you go, well, we got three loans with you and you got to pay down $5 million on this one and $20 million on this one, and $18 million on this one. You don't have any place to go. So you just got to think that stuff out and make sure you have a good solution.
That's great. Well, Dwayne, last question. Obviously, at the end, we want to hear about how people can find out more about Aegis. But before we get there, for people who are interested on the investment side of senior living and on the, I have an aged parent and I want to find out more, are there resources on either side of the table for those people?
Sure. I mean, you can obviously go to our website, aegisliving.com, aegisliving.com. I have my own website, which is Dwayne, DWAYNEJ, just the letter Clark, CLARK.com. So those are two ways to track us down. I'm happy to give you my email as well if you have questions about your aging parents or even about investments. Doesn't have to be in ages. We're not actively looking for investors, but we're always willing to educate people about the industry. So my email is Dwayne, DWAYNE.FARK, CLARK, at aegisliving.com. So happy to answer those questions and be a resource. And I'm probably have three people a week that ask me about their parents and what to do. And Aegis is not right for everyone. We feel we're the best option out there, but it may not be the right location, or it may be an economic issue, or they may have a parent in St. Louis they want to put someone in. But I can tell you, I'm probably one phone call away from every operator in this industry because I grew up in it and know it well. So I can tell you if they're good, bad, or about to go bankrupt. So,
well, very kind of you to share your email on the air like that. A guy that's as busy as you. So we appreciate that. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Well, thanks, Dwayne, for coming on. And to our listeners, we'll catch you on the next episode.